shooting out sparks over 38 states, the Canadian plains, and the tequila fields of Mexico.
A program most deserving of a grand introduction.
The Nocturnal Journal.
The Talk of the Town. WGN Radio 720.
With your guide, Dave Hoekstra.
Daytime turns me off and I don't mean maybe. 9 to 5 ain't taking me where I'm bound.
Welcome to the Nocturnal Journal here on WGN 720 from the Allstate Showcase Studio. Yeah, we've got quite a show tonight. We've got our friends, the Bedbugs, who came all the way in from South Chicago. They're setting up right now, one of my favorite local power pop bands. And on the phone later, we'll have Ben Vaughn, singer, songwriter, producer. He's done a lot of great work. We're going to begin by going down Route 66 with our friend Bill Thomas.
Hey, Dave.
From Atlanta, Illinois.
Yes.
So thanks for coming all the way in from Atlanta.
Oh, it was a pleasure to drive up.
And you know, a lot of people may not know about Atlanta, Illinois. So tell us about Atlanta, Illinois. I've known you for years, and you've kind of put tiny Atlanta on the map. But tell us about Atlanta, Illinois.
Atlanta, Illinois, Dave, is, as you know, a really small Midwestern town. There are 1,649 of us. At least that was the count last night when I went to bed, and I haven't heard any news to the contrary, so I think it's still 1,649. But our claim to fame is it's a very Route 66 community. We get lots of international tourists, lots of domestic tourists, and I think the reason why is because we've really tried to recreate what it was like to experience a small town back in the heyday of 66.
And Atlanta is it south of Bloomington? Normal?
It's south of Bloomington, yeah. About halfway between Bloomington and Springfield.
And what do you do in Atlanta? I met you. Tell us about.
Well, you know,
tell
since,
us about teleangelic.
Well, teleologic. Actually, since you and I met several years ago, I've retired.
I retired
in July
from
that. But I still have a day job. I'm actually now economic development director for the county, for Logan County. So.
Okay. And what did you do? I mean, you were in that little building, building, actually.
What I used to do was design and produce online training for corporate and government clients.
And
State Farm, Department of Homeland Security, the military. It was some pretty interesting
stuff. That always
stuff.
Fascinated me. You did that right out of Atlanta.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I have a background in education, so it wasn't a stretch, but it was unique that we were doing it out of that smaller town. Yeah.
Where were you born?
I was born in Cuba, Illinois.
Okay.
Slight pause.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cuba, Illinois, another small town.
Uh huh. And then what brought you to Atlanta?
You know what? It was halfway between where I was working and my wife was working when we got married. So we knew we wanted to be in a small town, raise our kids there. So.
And then what got you involved in Route 66? What percolated the love of Route 66 for you?
What percolated it was a desire to save my town of Atlanta. Because we were dying 10 years ago. Storefronts were boarded up. Nobody was moving to town. It was like so many small rural communities. It was on a downhill slide. Until we decided to try to leverage the one thing we did have, which was an original alignment of Route 66, right smack dab through the middle of town. So we did, and it has paid off for us.
And I've kind of followed your history. The first time one of the first times I met you, you let me ring the bell there in the clock tower. In the clock tower.
Yes, we went around the clock tower.
Tell us about it. Can people still do that?
Yes, there are seven of us in town who are the keepers of the clock. We have a clock and a 30-foot clock tower on the lawn of the library, and it has to be hand wound. So once every 2 days, somebody has to go and wind it, and we do still.
And then after that, when did the Paul Bunyan statue come in? That was 2004?
Oh, goodness, yeah. The Paul Bunyan statue came in 2004. If you would have been there last weekend, we repainted him.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, we repaint him about every 3 years, give him a fresh coat. So.
And you imported him from Cicero.
Tell us about the history of a lot of Route 66 folks are going to remember that he is a 19-foot-tall statue of a guy holding a hot dog, the only one on the planet. Okay, and he originated his career up at a hot dog stand in Cicero called Bunyan's. And when that went out of business after 40 years, we worked with the Illinois Route 66 Association and got him relocated to our town. We do not own him. He is still owned by the family that ran the hot dog stand.
I remember that.
Yeah, the Stevens family. Great family. So he is on long-term loan. He is our adopted sun.
And that's a big photo op, right? I've asked you before, how many different people from different countries take pictures of that?
We have names in the guest books from over 100 different countries. And he is, no pun intended, the single biggest draw to town. He really is. He's known globally.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And now he's across from the Palms Grill Cafe.
Yes.
Opened in 1934, closed 1968.
Yeah, somewhere in the late 60s. We're not absolutely certain.
And when did it reopen? And tell us about your involvement in it reopening.
It opened in 2009, and it's one of the things that has helped bring life back to the town, because our goal was to restore it and make it operate the way it did in 1934 when it first opened. So you walk in that front door, you hear music from the 40s, you see small wooden tables, you see a wooden pinball machine. If you order the blue plate special, it comes out on a blue plate, and it's all homemade, especially the pie.
Yeah,
yeah.
we're gonna get to that. I'm just going through some of the notes of previous visits I've made to the Palms. It used to be a Greyhound bus stop, and tell us about how you would catch a ride back in the day.
Yes, it was a Greyhound bus stop. It has a large 13-foot-tall neon sign on the front of the building that says Palms Grill Cafe. But back in the day, if you wanted the Greyhound bus to stop, you flipped a switch inside, and a little light on the bottom of the neon sign appeared, and that would make the bus stop. I don't know if you know this story about the bus stop. Atlanta did not have its own florist back in the 40s and 50s. So when prom time came around, when the high school kids needed their corsages and boutonnieres, they'd have to bring them up from Lincoln, the county seat 9 miles away, and they'd bring them up on the Greyhound bus. So all the kids would be out in front of the Palms Grill waiting for the Greyhound bus.
What a great story.
Yeah, to get their flowers for prom.
What a great story. Now, I've always told people about Atlanta. I mean, it's a really, really easy way to get out of Chicago and just have a real – what about places to stay? What about hotels and bed and breakfast? If you want to go to – what is it? How long a drive is it from here? 2 hours?
Oh, it's 2 hours.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's – we refer to ourselves as being midway in Illinois on the Mother Road. We're halfway between Chicago and St. Louis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you want to spend the night there
– if you want to spend the night, there is a small modern motel out by the interstate. But we have something much more unique inside the town, about a block and a half off of 66. We have what's called the Colaw Rooming House. And it's a house that we restored just 2 years ago.
You took me through it when you
did
were
I
doing
take you
it. Yeah, when
oh,
you were
when
starting.
We were doing it? Okay,
yeah,
right. Well, it's
I haven't seen
now.
It since it's been.
Oh,
yeah.
You got to come back. We'll put you up for the night.
Yeah.
We restored it to the way it looked back in 1947 when rooms were let out in it. So you can go there and spend the night now. Wake up in the morning, go eat over the cafe, and have a real Route 66 experience.
Isn't that something? How can people find out more information about that?
You can go online to Google the Colaw Rooming House.
How do you spell that?
C-O-L-A-W.
Okay.
It's the name of the family that lived there back in the 40s.
That's fascinating. You know, you've single-handedly kind of put this town on the, map.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean,
no.
Yeah, I know that, but...
A lot of people have been responsible, but what I am is a real nagger and a real pusher because I had this vision of what could be done, and a lot of folks have helped out with that. So
now, you and I have kept in touch, and then so this has led to... Now, this is fascinating to me. You're now chairman... See, I put this in yellow.
Yeah, you've got that see how writing and everything. That's a little scary.
Chairman of the steering committee of Route 66, the Road Ahead Initiative, a new national organization brought into being by the National Park Service and the World Monuments Fund. It's an effort to bring together all stakeholders across Route 66 to work together on our mission to revive and renew Route 66 as a symbol of freedom, adventure, and prosperity by engaging in cross-state collaboration, promotion, and preservation in order to foster economic development along the road. Boy, that's a mouthful.
It is
so
a mouthful.
So what are you going to do? When did this start? What are you going to do?
We had our first meeting 3 years ago this November out in Anaheim, California, brought together Route 66 stakeholders from across the country.
When you say stakeholders, what is
that? Oh, people who have an interest in Route 66, business owners, people that own attractions, citizens from communities that recognize the potential and the value of Route 66, brought them all together and said, look, up until that point, Dave, we primarily had 8 different state-based Route 66 associations. There were a couple of national organizations, but nothing that really spoke with one voice for all of Route 66. And that's what we wanted to create so that we could leverage that broad base of support.
Sometimes they would get competitive. I always feel sorry for Kansas because that's just 12 miles.
12 miles worth of Route 66, and I love the fact that each state has its own Route 66 association except Kansas, which has two.
Oh, they do? I didn't know.
They have two because there are a couple relatives that want to have two. Let's just put it that way.
So, I mean, where does this lead to preservation, and keeping things alive, thinking like what you did with the palms and stuff?
Well, what it gives us the opportunity to do is with this One Voice for 66, we can bring together state offices of tourism in each of the eight states. We can bring together economic developers from each of the eight states. We can share what works in terms of leveraging Route 66 to economically develop your community. We can focus on the preservation projects that are most important, bridges that need to be saved, buildings that need to be saved, etc. In addition, I think this is a really interesting part of the organization we put together. Not only do we represent all eight states and their associations, we also have an international advisory group. I'm sure you're aware there are a dozen or more, 20 different international Route 66 associations.
Yeah, right.
So we wanted a group that could advise us and give us that international perspective so that we make sure, because, you know, a lot of folks that travel Route 66 are from Europe, Asia, Australia, South America, et cetera. We want to make sure that's a great experience for them, too. So we have an international group that advises us.
How do you prioritize things in terms of preservation? How do you determine what's important, a building, a bridge, pecking order?
No, not really, but you look for the things that are authentic representations of what made the road the road. The road, and I mean, it starts with as fundamental a thing as the roadbed itself, and making sure that that is preserved. The bridges that were built, because all too often, God love them, departments of transportation just want to rip out an old bridge and put in something new instead of taking the time to save that original concrete and ensure that it remains for you to travel.
We got to take a break. I remember when I did the whole trip in 91, I think it was in Oklahoma where I still saw the pink curbing.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know what I meant? That was great. I want to talk more about this. I want to talk about pies in Atlanta.
Okay,
so
all right.
Don't go away on Nocturnal Journey.
If you ever plan to motor west, travel my way, take the highway, that's the best. I get your kicks on Route 66. It winds from Chicago.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN. We're here with our great friend Bill Thomas from Atlanta, Illinois. That's Nat King Cole. That's very nocturnal.
That's right.
What's your favorite version of Route 66?
Oh, the classic Nat.
Yeah, you really?
Absolutely.
Seriously?
Oh,
you and I didn't talk about this.
No, we didn't. We didn't, but yeah.
Asleep at the Wheel? Do you like their version?
I like Nat. So, yeah. I'm a traditionalist.
Yeah. I used to see his brother. I never saw Nat.
Oh, did you
really? Well, Ike Cole played at the Pump Room.
Oh,
yeah, years ago.
Okay,
I was
cool.
Beginning to write about music for the Sun-Times. So tell us, I'm going to participate in this. I'm actually going to do music and some of my pictures of 66. The Route 66 Miles of Possibility Conference, October 20th to 23rd in Bloomington Normal. So take it away.
Yes, this is actually the second time we've held a Route 66 related conference in Illinois. The first one was down in Edwardsville, south of Springfield last year. This year, as you said, it'll be in Bloomington. Next year, it'll go up to Joliet, and then we'll sort of rotate southern part of the state, middle part, northern, and we'll just keep it going. Primary purpose is to help communities better learn how they can leverage Route 66 for economic development purposes.
So who comes to these?
Is
it open to the public?
It is open to the public. Our primary target audience, though, Dave, is we're trying to get mayors and city council persons, city managers, economic development directors. because a lot of folks just don't realize the money that can come into their community if they work Route 66 the right way.
And how is the right way? I mean, I've gone up and down, especially on some of these trips I've been taking. I go to Tulsa a lot and then back. I mean, you know, I've done the, you know, I'll go places like Litchfield or something. I'll see a sign for a Route 66 park, or, you know, somebody can just slap up a sign and say Route 66.
Yes, you can.
So how do you take it to the next level?
Well, we discovered, and that now we've used consistently, a principle. And we abide by it. And the principle is give people experiences.
Oh, that's
okay,
interesting.
Don't just let them see a sign or see an interpretive panel or even just, quote unquote, visit a museum. No, actively involve them somehow and engage as many of their senses as possible in the process. Because then you start using the formula of the more time you get them to spend in your community, the more you increase the probability they're going to spend money in your community, and that's where experience then translates into economic development.
That's very
based
interesting.
On 66.
What about preservation? Maybe it was Tom Teague who told me this. Some people are, when they talk about preservation, they want things. I've said this to groups that I talk to. They want things to stay exactly the same. But Route 66 is a fluid and changing thing, you know. So how do you straddle that?
It began changing the day after it was commissioned in 1926. Uh-huh. It has been ever evolving. It's an organic entity, and that's what we should be recreating, not just a pristine sort of Disneyland version of some particular decade. No, you preserve and do adaptive reuse of older buildings or use them for their originally intended purpose. But that's the key. You use them. You don't just preserve them and let people look at them from the outside, if you will.
Yeah.
No, they serve a usefulness then.
And you think about, I know you and I have done this. I mean, you think about Todd and Buzz and their convertible and stuff, but you've also done stuff with electric cars.
And that's part of the whole aspect of Route 66 is evolving. You know this, I think. The only reason we have gas stations in this nation today is because of roads like Route 66, because an infrastructure had to be developed in order to service this tremendous surge in cars that all of a sudden started out on the highways. What's the next big thing? Being able to create a new infrastructure for a new form of cars. We have an electric vehicle recharging station in Atlanta,
right,
and
in
it
Atlanta.
Gets used all the time. It's great.
I know where that is.
Yeah,
that's great. Has Willie Nelson been by?
No, Willie hasn't been by. No, he's welcome anytime.
A couple things I want to. Yeah. I want to get to the pies. I don't want to.
Okay.
But I get this a lot about people say I'm doing Route 66, and they always ask me, you know, like where are we? But what are some good resources? I want to send people to Ron Warnick's site. I think that's good. www.route66news.com. But that's where I'm doing this book on camping. He has even a thing about campsites on Route 66.
Ron's site is very authoritative, and he's just the best source for any and all news about what's happening along Route 66 across the country. I'll do a plug for Jerry McClanahan.
Okay, I don't know that one.
Oh, hands down the best turn-by-turn directional book about Route 66 going either east out to California or coming from California or going west out to California or coming east back to Chicago. So his are the best directions, and he has the most, in my opinion, comprehensive list of all the attractions, restaurants, places to stay, etc. Jerry McClanahan.
Always changing, though, right?
Oh, always changing. He has to update it all the time.
And as long as you're here, I want to plug this with my friends. We have the history, that actually is the 90th anniversary of Route 66 with Susan Croce Kelly and David Clark, one of my friends at the Society of Midland Authors. And that's Monday, September 12th at 6 o'clock at the Harold Washington Library Center, 400 South Strait. Free, open to the public, no advance reservation required. Do you know Susan? I think she's been on Rick
Hogan's show. I know Susan. I have met her. I just read, she wrote a wonderful new book about one of the best books I've read about Cyrus Avery, the father of Route 66. She did a fabulous job with that book.
Yeah. So tell me, in the time we have left, how to make pies. You once told me there's two good ways to make pies. You took a pie baking.
Yeah. Yes.
Where was that at?
I taught at Heartland Community College. Okay. And then I teach out of the high school, the local high school. I teach pie baking.
What high school is that?
Olympia High School.
Okay.
I know the foods teacher. She didn't know how to make pie. So she called me out, and I said, okay, I'll teach your classes. So twice a year I go out. You want the recipe?
Told me once that I've never made a pie in my life, I made baked Alaska once in high school. But vegetable oil instead of lard?
Hands down, if you want great flavor, do it the old-fashioned way and use lard.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Don't do it a lot because that's probably the worst thing you could possibly eat. But hands down, flavor-wise, it's best. Simplest, and the recipe that I've won Illinois State Fair Blue Ribbons with, uses vegetable oil. And it's a fabulous recipe.
And you bake it at a higher temperature.
Bake it higher,
affects the crust, right?
400 to 425 degrees. It makes that crust nice and crispy. Yep.
And so these pies, people can sample them at the cafe, the Palms Cafe?
They can pay for them too, yeah.
and how many different, what are the popular flavors?
Oh, gosh, today when I went up there before we came up here to the city, and I think they had coconut cream, chocolate cream, blueberry, cherry, apple. That's all I can remember, but you know, it's a healthy selection.
You're a fascinating guy.
Oh, Dave.
You know, that's why I was interested in all the technology. And then you said you've never owned a cell phone.
No, and I never will.
Because I remember when I tried to get a hold of you in Atlanta to tell you I generally was running late.
Right.
Running late. And sometimes you took calls at the Palms. You went down to the Palms.
Yeah.
And you've never used an ATM.
I have never used an ATM.
And you avoid self-checkout lines.
Yes, I do. I was chagrined coming up here today because I went into a McDonald's and saw for the first time one of those self-order kiosks. Come on. I like to deal with people.
Yeah.
So when I go to the bank, I want to go into the bank and talk with the tellers.
Yeah, so do I.
When I check out, I want to talk with the checkout person. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming up, Bill Thomas.
Thank you, Dave. It's such a pleasure to see you again.
It's been fun. We're going to see you at the Route 66 Miles of Possibility Conference, October 20th, 23rd, 2016 in Bloomington Normal. Is there a website for that yet or anything? How can people find out?
Google Miles of Possibility, Route 66 Miles of Possibility.
Just don't call you on your cell phone.
No,
you won't answer.
No, I won't answer.
Okay.